Good morning, fellow alcoholics and friends. My name is Della Bam Carruthers, and I'm a grateful, happy alcoholic. I'm glad to be here, but I say that everywhere I go, I'm just glad to be alive. I'm glad to know where I am, and tomorrow I'm going to be glad to know where I've been. And that is a switch for a drunk like me. My dry date was approximately December the 1st, 1952. They were so busy trying to save my life, they didn't have time to write down when they gave me the last drink. I nearly died. The doctor's prognosis was that if I lived, that I very likely would have a wet brain, but he thought that I'd die of a heart attack first. So I'm glad that happened. I'm glad they told me that. I'm glad that I was that sick. Otherwise, I would not have surrendered. I would not have surrendered. And sometimes we don't get as many just full-blown alcoholics in anymore. I'm at the North Hollywood group every day, and they come in and they drank a little, but they took more pills and did some of those things. And they start talking about narcotics, and I said, you know, we got a lot of narcotics meetings in town. This is Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're going to talk about that. They don't like it, and I tell them what they can do if they don't. Because, you know, we can't be all things to all people. You know, I do well if I help an alcoholic. But not too long ago, a young girl came in, when I say young, you know, in comparison with my age. She's possibly 30. And she came in, and she was sick. Oh, was she sick. And one of the girls took her into the bathroom, and I went back there to see how she was. And, you know, she was upchucking. She was on her knees in front of the toilet, of course. And I went back there to see how she was, and the girl that took her back there said, I've never seen anybody do this before. I could have slapped her. I could have. And I saw to it that she got an alcoholic to sponsor her. And this little girl was, you know, sort of backed away from her. I love being sober. I think best of all, I love working with the new alcoholic. You know, the ones that think they're going to die. And I think that we have a better chance if we are that sick. It's all right to come a little earlier than that, you know. It's okay. I'm so glad to be back here in Lubbock. This is for the 15th anniversary. I haven't missed too many of the years and don't like to miss any of them. It's wonderful to get back here and see people that I have learned to love so much over the years. I look out there and I see you sitting in here, and I look forward to this. I look forward, you know, months ahead of time to this. I travel enough and I speak often enough, but I look forward to getting back in visiting with you, and because you're my family back here. You're my family. Well, as I said, I didn't get to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because I drank a little chill wine. I got here because I drank like a pig. My brother said that pigs do not flounder themselves. And he said that I better describe it some other way. In my family, there were four of us that were alcoholics. Two of them died of alcoholism. And I have a sister that came in through the church, and she's still sober. And you know, I haven't tried to fix it. I haven't told her she better go out of town to AA meetings. It's working for her. And I don't try to fix it at all. And she had children to raise and a business to take care of because her husband had died an alcoholic. And she didn't have time for AA. You know, to go out of town and get AA. And it works. And it works real good. And she's happy. And I'm happy for her. And I was surprised. I never told her that she better get there to AA meeting so she wouldn't stay sober. Because I know people can do it, but I'm glad I didn't have to. I love AA. I love the people in AA. I go to some parties where the people are not alcoholic, and you know, it's such a dull evening. None of them have nearly died, you know, or none of them have been in jail and, you know, penitentiaries. And I don't know how to talk to them anymore. And I wonder, God, did I talk that kind of party talk? It just bores me to death now. I think I'll tell you about my first drink. I graduated from high school when I was 16, and I was one of the youngest people in the crowd that went, we went to a spend the night party at one of the girls' houses, and then we all had dates. And we were allowed to go out in cars because we had cousins along and brothers and so forth. And somebody said that we had some good wine. Would I like some? And I said, of course. And they poured me a tiny little bit, and I said, please fill the glass. I'm accustomed to it. I was the only one that got drunk. The only one, and oh, I was sick all night, and they tried to keep me quiet so the family wouldn't know it. And I had to sit next to the hostess the next morning, the mother of our hostess the next morning, and she knew I liked chicken lovers, and she kept putting them on my plate. And you know how I felt. I didn't know for sure whether it was going to happen at the table or not. I had to go home early because I promised Mother I would come and help her get ready for a dinner party that night. And so when I got home, she asked me what we did the night before. And I said, Mama, I don't know what the rest of them did. I got drunk. And I laughed and shrugged my shoulders. And Mama said, you mustn't talk that way, Evelyn. Someday people will believe you. And, you know, I learned to lie by intimation. You know, tell the truth and then and laugh and shrug my shoulders. And it's the hardest lying in the world to break. You know, if you tell a direct lie, you know what you've done. And it's you can quit lying with direct lying, but you know, I had a hard time with the lying by intimation. And my mother never did know that I got drunk then. I had some other experiences with it. I liked the taste of alcohol. I liked the effect of alcohol. I liked the people that drank. I liked the company of alcoholics. And I started going with a man after, I think I was about 19 when I met him. And he was quite a few years my senior, very sophisticated, a mining engineer, gold mining, that is. And I was the gold digger. And, but I really fell in love with the man. It's easy. It's easier when they have money. And I really loved that man. And he asked all of the men to bring their wives out for a party one Sunday and their girlfriends so that they might see the mine. And of course I went and I acted as his hostess. And it was a cold day and the dinner table was near the fireplace and my back was to the fire. And I was drinking an awful lot that day. And have you ever known you were just going to fall in your plate? I knew that it was no way that I could escape it. And so as I went over, I said, oh, my heart. And everybody but my fiancé was very concerned about my heart attack. And they wanted to know if should they get an ambulance or a doctor, and said, no, we just have me pick her up and we'll take her and put her on the bed and let her sleep it off. He knew I was drunk. And on the way home, I loved this man. He was the only man I had worn an engagement ring or two because all the girls did, you know, but I didn't have any intention of marrying those fellas. I just go wear those rings until I met the right man, you know. And so on the way home, he told me that he couldn't marry me if I drank like that, that I would have to be the company hostess, that I'd have to set an example for the other wives, and I would have to entertain the stockholders and so forth. So I couldn't, he just couldn't be married to me if I was going to drink like that. And I said, well, that's your problem. And you know, when I was drunk, it just seemed that way to me. And I wouldn't have made a statement like that sober to him, because I wanted to marry him. As I said, he's the only man I was ever in love with. And so I was just about ready to pass out when I heard somebody knock on my bedroom door, and he had come back to tell me that he, to apologize to me, and I told him it was perfectly all right, and turned over and passed out. And I never shall forget that. I made a good hostess for him. I liked people and I liked entertaining, and my mother and daddy had always entertained a lot, so it came easy for me to do it. And I really, and I loved the traveling with him. I loved the interesting people that we met. You know, like a lot of the stockholders, I had read about them in the Wall Street Journal, and I thoroughly enjoyed them. And it wasn't just because they had money. They were interesting people. Like, you know, I met people that had founded diamond mines, you know. And I've heard people exaggerate and all those things, but these people had it. And I really enjoyed it. And I met Wendell Willkie and liked him very much and turned Republican that year. And I went home to tell my dad I wasn't going to vote the Democratic ticket that year. And I stumped Wendell Willkie. And I really enjoyed it. I had the opportunity to travel a great deal with them. My expenses were paid. And everything went fine until one of the dinner parties that I planned. It was not going to be anybody, any other woman but me there. And it was for the major stockholders of the company. The chairman of the board was there and so forth and so on. I sat to his right, and I had gotten the best club in town. I had gotten ordered the best food, the best music, flowers. Everything was just perfect. Everybody had complimented everything that I had done. And one of the waitresses came over. I was drinking quite a little bit, but I could hold quite a little bit. I had a good capacity for it, but I always drank beyond my capacity. But anyhow, what happened was that one of the waitresses came over and said, Miss Brown, have you seen the new American Dollar? And I said, well, no, I haven't. Didn't even know they had published one, a printed one. And she opened her hand up, and it was a new nickel. And she said, here it is with the taxes there. Well, when you're drunk, you think something is funny. And I thought that was real funny. So I said, loan me the nickel. And I did the same thing to the chairman of the board. And that man looked at me in utter disgust. And he said, I didn't know you had communistic ideas. You don't say that to a drunken Southerner. I stood up so my voice would carry. I pointed at the man so everybody in the room would know who I was talking to. And I called him a son of a bitch. I had never used that word before in my life. And I told him my family was making this a safe democracy when his family was trying to get steerage together. And the bad part of it was true. We didn't ever have another party, a mixed party. The men just went on and had their stags without me. And my husband thought that he might have to resign, but he didn't. And they just never had another party until my husband died of a heart attack, because they couldn't insult him by not inviting me. And I told you I loved this man, and I truly loved him. He was the only man I'd ever wanted to be married to. And that's the only trouble we ever had in this marriage, was my drinking too much. And I was trying not to drink quite so much. But it just got worse and worse. And I had to hide a lot of it from George. I had my bottle, and I drank with him socially. And then I go back and drink out of my bottle, you know, because he didn't drink enough to suit me. And I was getting worse and worse. And George was traveling a lot for the company, opening some mines and so forth. And I had to find headquarters for me. And, you know, I was drinking when I decided where I was going to live. I liked the Cardinals, so I just decided to move to St. Louis. And it seemed as good reason to go to St. Louis as any other, you know. And I moved there, and I really did try not to drink so much. I put myself in business school, you know, thinking if I went to school that I wouldn't drink so much. Well, then I went to night classes at college, and I took salesmanship course. It was just, there were quite a few women that signed up for it, but there was only two of us that finished it. The rest were men, and a lot of that company sent these men there, you know, and I liked the course, and because the men always invited me to go drinking with them afterwards, you know, and I liked it very much. But it just went from bad to worse with me, and the family was most concerned, and they just didn't know what they could do for me. And George died, and I felt like that I never would be able to get sober and stay sober. And my family, finally, my brother, I was in and out of hospitals. I started in California and ended up in New York. I was in the Old Towns Hospital it was the same hospital that had been moved over to the Roosevelt Hospital, but Teddy, the red-headed nurse that Bill knew, was there. And a doctor had said that he could, if I would, that he could get me in there if I was willing to go, that he could get me in there because it was for alcoholics. And I was in and out of hospitals all across the country. I used hospitals like hotels. And I used nurses like maids. I'm not proud of any of these things. And I used ambulances like taxis. It was easier to get one than a taxi during the war. And my family finally found me in New York. I had become engaged to a man whose name I cannot remember. And we were to leave for Florida. And all I remember about him, he had lost a hand in World War II. And he had lost a hand. And I had called somebody I knew in Alabama. And he talked to them too. And they knew his family. And they said it was first family down in Florida, Episcopalians, money, you know, all of the things that you need for a good marriage, except I didn't know him at all. All I'd ever done had been drunk with him, you know. And so the next morning we went out to have a breakfast at some nice restaurant. And I looked at that man, and I couldn't remember his name. And he said, "We better hurry." And I said, "What's our hurry?" And he said, "We don't want to miss our plane." And so help me, for a minute, I couldn't think where we were going. So I said, "You are so right. I'll just better excuse myself and go to the bathroom. And while you finish your breakfast, and then we'll leave." Well, I left from the bathroom. I've never seen him since. I was speaking one Sunday, and I'd given a real spiritual talk. And I was standing up at the podium like this. There was a door back of me. And a man walked in with a faux tan, you know. And I thought, "Oh, my God, here's my past." And I all but I thought I had done exceedingly well, you know, for a spiritual meeting. And I thought about going out of the door and just running. And then I decided I just better stay and face it. And I stayed, and I went over and introduced myself to the man, and he was from Texas, and he wasn't a man I already knew. And he asked me to go out with him while he was out in California, and I was so grateful that it wasn't the other man that I did, you know. Oh, God, it was just awful, just awful. Oh, I just... I could live on what I spent for doctors and hospitals. And my brother finally found me in New York. I'd been gone quite a while. And but he found me because the Waldorf Astoria called him. And they asked, what they were going to do about my bill. And he says, you know, she's an adult. We don't pay her bills. And they said, well, she said she represented your company. And it was, you know, and he said, she doesn't represent me or the company. And I said that, they said, well, will she pay us? And he said, well, so far she has paid her bills, but we have no access to her safety deposit box. We have no idea what she has left. But so far, she has paid all of her bills. But that wasn't true because I made a lot of bills in New York. They told me I'd have to leave if I didn't pay at once. And I told them that I wasn't able to travel and that I'd stay there until I was. And do you know, they didn't throw me out. And I stayed there till I got ready to move. I ended up in three different hotels in town. And I was still checked into two of them. It was just awful, just awful. And, you know, every once in a while when I have to buy something and feel that I'm being extravagant, I think, my God, if I just hadn't stayed in all of those, registered in all of those hotels, I'd be way ahead right now, you know. But a doctor put me in this hospital, and I stayed there, and I went to a meeting in New York. I always went to a meeting with an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting as a courtesy if they had taken me to a hospital. I just thought it was a courtesy I could extend to them. And, well, things went along pretty well until my brother finally found me in another hotel. And there was a doctor and a nurse in the room when he called that time. My brother lives in a fairly small town in Missouri, and the operators would just call all the hotels until they found me. And they're very accommodating to the people they know there in town. And my brother talked to the doctor, and he said, would you please put her on a plane? And so we doubted she can get her on a plane. And he said, oh, yes, what you do, you put a fifth in a paper sack and you squash the paper around it so she know it's a fifth. And somebody walk ahead of her and put it on the seat that she is to sit on. And I guarantee you she'll get out of that wheelchair you've wheeled out there in and that she'll beat you up the steps. That's what happened. I fell off in the arms of my nephew out in the field at St. Louis, and he wouldn't stop all the way to Sedalia, Missouri, because they told him not to make a stop. That I would say I'd go to the bathroom and I'd find a way out that they didn't know about, you know. And my two brothers told me they loved me, but they said that they were going to have to ask Mother and Daddy to have me committed, you know, to something similar to Camarilla in California. I've forgotten the name of the one in Missouri. And that they would hate to do it, but that it just wasn't any choice. That it just wasn't any choice that I was spending my money like there was no into it, you know. There was, I found out. And that they had to do something. And, you know, I knew they were right, and I wasn't angry with them. I knew I needed to be locked up. I knew I was insane. But after I had that next streak, you know, I knew I wasn't insane. And they didn't put me in there. I had to go to a hospital to have breast surgery. Now, I used to carry my bottle in my bra, so a policeman, if they stopped me, couldn't, you know, touch me there. So, and I thought, oh my gosh, if I've got cancer, own responsibility. I have a stole up here with me. I wore stoles, and you could camouflage the bottle. And I never got caught with a bottle, you know, a driving drunk. I have had, in my brother's hometown, the policeman said, wouldn't you like for us to drive you home? You know. And God knows I got by with everything but murder. And finally, my brother went to the policeman and told them that he wanted them to arrest me like any other common drunk, that they were not doing me a favor by letting me be out there drinking. And he said, just put her in the drunk tank with the winos. And they wouldn't do it, but they were awfully good to me, really awfully good. But my brother, Minnick, when he told them, he said, we'll see that you do it. Well, I got out of the hospital, and I decided I'd stay sober, you know. And my brother took me to his home for dinner. Oh, I forgot to tell you, before I went in the hospital, I was told that they would prefer that I would not be around their children drinking. And so I'd just stay away when I was drunk. And I grieved that I would. And they took me to their home, and I had a nice dinner, and I was so happy to be out of the hospital. I'd been there about 3 weeks. You know, today they keep me about 3 days, but my brother had them keep me. They were always going to keep me in the hospital long enough until I got all the alcohol out of the system and I wouldn't want to drink again. And, you know, they believed they could do it. They believed they could do it. And I went home. And I can't describe it any way except it seemed to me that in my small apartment that the walls were just coming in and were going to crush me. I couldn't stand being in that apartment without drinking. My sister-in-law had bought food and put in there, and they had cleaned it up, you know, for the mess I might have left it in drunk. And I just couldn't stand it. And I ordered a case of whiskey, and I wasn't expecting any company. And I took the bottles to bed with me. They found them under the cover with me. They found them under the bed. They found all of the food still in the refrigerator that my sister-in-law's had bought. That I had, they seen no sign of me. I haven't eaten anything. And I drank for 5 days and nights out of the bottle in the bed. And when I got up on the fifth day, I found out all these things later. And I was trying to get dressed to go to work. Now, I worked for my brothers a short period of time, but that had been 6 months ago, you know, from this time I was getting dressed to go to work. What I didn't know, it was 7 o'clock in the evening, not 7 o'clock in the morning. And in December in Missouri, it's still dark, you know, at 7 o'clock, either way, you know, in the evening or in the morning. And a woman called me from AA. I always made courtesy calls to AA all across the country, you know, for these people that take care of me and help me. And this woman called me and asked me, couldn't she come over and get me and take me home with her? I guess the landlady had called my brothers and told them that what I was drinking. And I asked if I could take my bottle. Oh, I told her I had to go to work. And she said, well, I'd still have time to do all of that. You know, if I'd just go home with her and spend the night. And when she said night, I didn't know what she was talking about. Because it was morning, I thought. And she said she'd buy a bottle, but she would control the alcohol. And she took me home with her, and she called people like you. And there weren't but two women in this little town of Sedalia, Missouri, that were alcoholic. And that knitted they wore and when they ate. But the wives came with the men, and they took turns setting up with me. And they took turns of lifting me out of the bed and bathing me and changing the bed. You know how those things happen. And they tried all night long to find somewhere they could take me. All of the hospitals I'd been in, they said they couldn't help me. There was no way they could help me. And there were hospitals back then, good ones, for men, but not for women. And there was a snowstorm, and they couldn't fly me out to Akron or New York or California, where they could have gotten me in a hospital. And none of the hospitals that I had been in Missouri would take me. You know, I gave them trouble. I pulled out IVs and things like that. And they ended up, one man said that planes weren't flying, and they wouldn't take me on the train. And the man worked for the railroad company, but they said they that would slow them up if I died on the schedule.
Highway patrolman told him he was traveling at his own risk, that the roads were very, very icy, and that they said that we've got to go, and I'm not afraid, and I was taken. And so, my first band sponsor, I had four men sponsors. I like men. And they could handle me a little bit better when I've got, when DTs and so forth. Anyhow, I like women too, but see, I didn't like you women when I was out there drinking, because I thought you were like me. I thought you were phony. And, because now that I'm sober, I like women very much. And before I became a drunk, I liked women very much. But, the men treated me nicer when I was drunk than the women did. And they talked a man taking me into a place on Skid Row, if they had one, in Independence, Missouri. And this was a place where they just simply, the men in the group, took care of their brothers that were drunk, and they nursed them through their DTs and so forth and so on. And they kept calling and trying to get me in hospitals, and they just couldn't do it. They said they didn't know what to do for me. Now, Dr. Nason, these people I'm talking about that I called their last names are dead, so I'm not breaking their anonymity. I think in heaven they don't care. And Dr. Nason had a wonderful hospital there in Kansas City, Kansas. And I don't know if y'all know it, but he sobered up as many men as Dr. Bob did. And he used some of Dr. Bob's treatment, but he worked out one of his own. And they called this man, and he came in the snowstorm. And he told them, what the prognosis was and everything. And the man called Walt, who became a real sponsor. I had four men sponsors. But Walt was the one that really gave me most of the program that I know. And he called Dr. Nason, and Dr. Nason came over in a snowstorm and told Walt that really I should be in the hospital. And Walt said, we have tried. And he said, I don't know. I can't get her in one either. And Walt said, I'll stay with her if you'll treat her. And he said, the roads are awful, Walt. He said, but yes, but she's going to die without your help. And this man came twice a day from Kansas City, Kansas, to treat me. Walt stayed 5 days and nights in the room with me. And if you haven't spent 5 days and nights with a drunk that was in the condition I was in, I have. But I tell you, I had to give up and call for help. I couldn't handle it till the end of the fifth day. But I'm grateful. I'm grateful I was that sick. I'm grateful for Walt staying there with me. They brought him a reclining chair in. I saw him take off his shoes after I started feeling a little bit better, and his feet were nearly twice the size, it looked to me. They went as far as got a place if they might put me in the jail there in Independence, Missouri, if you know, in a padded cell so I would not hurt myself or others. And at the end of the fifth day, Walt told me that he'd done everything that he knew to do for a drunk, and Walt had helped a lot of drunks. The doctor had done everything that medical science knew to do. And he said, Alabama, we have prayed for you. The whole group has prayed for you. I have prayed constantly that God would restore you to sanity and remove the obsession for you to drink on a lifetime basis, a day at a time. And he said, maybe God does not come uninvited by the host. He said, why don't you ask God to remove the obsession for you to drink on a lifetime basis, a day at a time? And I said, well, you know, I can't remember that. And he said, yes, I know, honey. But he said, ask God to let you mean what you're going to repeat. And I repeated that prayer. And in a dirty bathroom that 12 men and I were using to sober up, just one bathroom, and I heard God say to me, don't be frightened, newcomers. If you'd been there, you wouldn't have heard anything. But I heard God say to me that I could be sober and I could be sane on a lifetime basis, a day at a time. And you know, that wasn't the miracle. The miracle was, I believed it. I believed it in late December, of early December 1952. And I have believed it for these 36 years and 6 months, I think it is, exactly. I have believed it, that I can be sober and I can be sane on a lifetime basis, a day at a time. And those people kept me there for 2 months, because they didn't know what else to do with for me. At the end, the women came and they couldn't handle me, the men, but the drunks could. But the women sat outside of my door so it would look proper that I was attended by the men. No, my family, they told my family that they just really couldn't keep me too much longer there, because a few women that would come had just worn out, you know, coming up there. And they said, well, Walt, does she really need an attendant? And he says, no, but he says that it looks better this way and there won't be any gossip or anything. My brother said, I don't give a damn how it looks. You saved her life, Walt. And if you were good enough to stay in there with a woman who was insane 5 days and nights, I certainly can leave her up there indefinitely with you if you would keep her. And he said, she knows what she's doing now. She doesn't need another woman there. And Walt said, well, we'll be glad to, if you don't mind. But we can't get women always in. But we'll be glad for her to stay here. And I stayed there. And folks, I'm so glad I stayed there, because I started giving away as quickly as I had gotten it. And anything I learned, I found a newcomer and told them, you know, and told them how they told me to put it in practice. I have never in my life, and I came from a loving family, I have never in my life felt such love as that these alcoholics gave me, the ones that were getting sober there and the ones that were sober and that were helping, trying to help us. I felt like I just had a room full of brothers, and I still feel the same way. I'd love to tell you that I just took this wonderful inventory, you know, and I became honest all at once and all these things. Didn't happen that way, but I took an inventory, because when I was unable to take it myself, my sponsor started taking it for me. Mm-hmm. And Walt told me that I couldn't get much better than a wood inventory at first. And I said, like what? And he says, like lie. And I said, Walt, I don't lie, I exaggerate. I fought everything that he tried to tell me, you know. He said, write down lie, Alabama. And he says, what's the opposite of lie? And I said, truth. He said, write down truth. That is what you are to start speaking the truth. And then he said, write down thief. And I said, Walt, I haven't stolen anything since I was a tiny child and picked up nickels and dimes dead and mama left around. I said, you said you went out with married men. He said, you're a thief, Alabama. You stole those men from their wives. They spent money on you that that the wife and children should have been, had spent on them. And I said, well, you don't know me at all. I never went out with a man that didn't have enough for all of us. And because I like the better places. And Walt went through the inventories with me. And he went through them with me. And then when it came to the sex inventory and the internal revenue inventory, he said that he thought I'd better talk to an Episcopal priest. And I did, because he said that the priest couldn't tell anybody that I had not paid my income tax. I paid it, but it's just what I wanted to, you know, and not my husband became a chronic gambler, and we lived in Nevada, and he started borrowing money on all of our mining stock, and, you know, like, it was very fine mining stock, and they would give him 75% on the dollar, and I just couldn't pay taxes on something with that I didn't see the returns from. But anyhow, this priest told me that he believed that God would understand if I didn't mention that to the Internal Revenue. They didn't find out about it, and then he said you could say you didn't know about it. And then when I took my sex inventory with him, you know, it wasn't as bad as I thought. It wasn't as bad as I thought. And he didn't look at me like he was disgusted. He kept a smile on his face while I was giving him the inventory. And he told me that God loved me and that I could be the woman that I had been one time in my life and that I could forgive myself for what I had done. And he didn't believe that I would do those things anymore if I would quit drinking. And I loved that man. I loved the men that said I was a lovely lady and that made me feel like I was a lady again. And I'm very grateful because I tried to act like that. I tried to act like I was a lady again. And then things happened. Things happened, and folks, this is sad what I'm going to tell you. My sponsor said I had to go to work. I asked him to spell the word. It grated on my ears. And my brother got me a job with the state of Missouri. You know, he knew a lot of people. And Walt said I couldn't take the job. And I said, why? And he said, because I'm a taxpayer. He'd already told my family not to send me one penny of money for one solid year. For one solid year. And he told my family he'd get me a job. And you know that man, after I was 2 months sober, got me a job clicking on a terrazzo floor in a Katz drug company. It's hospital now. A Katz drug company at 76 cents an hour. And I had stayed in the finest hotels and been to the finest clubs in any town. You know, I didn't eat plain food. I like rich food. You know, 76 cents an hour. And I bitched. And you know what that man said? I'll pay him to teach me how to work. He told me if I didn't stay there 2 years that my recommendation would not be any good. And you know, I had to believe the man because he'd been right about everything else. And you know, my mother had a slip. She sent me a check to buy a dress for my first AA birthday party a week ahead of time because she wanted me to have the dress to wear to the party. And Walt said that was all right, that mother sent it. And my brother brought me a sack of mail to the hospital, you know, like that. Primarily bills. And my brother told me I must contact every one of them. And I said, by what? You know, I thought he was going to say, use his phone number or his credit card or something. And he said, you write them all. And you tell them that you will have to wait to pay them that you have been ill. And I said, well, what shall I say I've been ill from? And he says, try the word alcoholism. And he made me write every creditor. And he told me to tell them what I would do when I could. And I wrote them, and I said, small, small, small payments to the ones, the small bills. And to the big bills, I sent token payments just to let them know that I didn't want, and ask them not to write it off. And I had to write all those people that I'd been suffering from a disease called alcoholism. And that I was, my husband's estate was still tied up in court. And I stayed in touch with those people, and I sent every one of them token payments that I promised that I would send a token payment. I came out to California after I had been sober and worked there for 2 years. I stayed to the date, 2 years, because he told me that's what I had to do. And I came out to California, and I met a man, and I was going to get married. I wanted a nice two-soap, and I just didn't have the money for it. You know, the kind of two-soap I wanted. I had found the Molly Pond Express, you know, a few little things like that, at Bullock. And I went in and talked to the credit manager and said, you know, we owe you this big, big bill. And she looked and she found the letters and attached the communication that I'd say, you know, sent them and so forth. And I said, could I open another account in my name? And you know, that woman let me do it that day. And she said, well, you get to close in 4 or 5 days. And I said, no, I got to have them today so they can be altered, because I'm going to get married 2 days from now. And do you know that she let me buy the whole trousseau there and put the credit in my name? And because I wrote those letters that my sponsor and my brothers told me to. And I eventually got everybody paid. And that was real freedom. That was real freedom when I did. Then I felt that I could spend money any way I wanted to if I made it. I married Jim, and he was in AA. And Jim was a bright man, and we liked each other. We had fun together. And I was only married a year and a week, and Jim was killed in an automobile accident. And it was tough, folks. It was tough. I remembered I was not notified properly that Jim had been killed. The undertaker called me from Boulder City, Nevada, and asked me what disposition to make of the body. And I didn't know Jim had been killed. And he finally figured out that I was Evelyn Brown Porter, and that he had buried my... I thought he was talking about the ashes of my first husband, because he had had all the funeral and so forth. And I had not been told that Jim was dead by until then. And I remembered that there was a bottle in the kitchen, and that I didn't have to accept the fact he was dead, that I could black it out. And I stood right there, still holding the phone. I told him I'd call him back, or call me if I didn't. And I stood right there holding the phone. And I could see the bottle that we served people, you know, business acquaintances that came in. And that I knew that I could go back there and I could drink that beer, and that I wouldn't have to remember for a little while that Jim was dead. And I stood still and I started praying. And I started praying. And I knew that no matter what happened, I didn't have to drink. And I got on the phone and I dialed a person in AA, and they were there in about 10 minutes. Everything, I thought I did very well through it all. And, but it got to where I was doing a lot of poor me, poor me, poor me, poor me, poor me. And there were two men in the club that loved me enough, I was in Bakersfield then, that said it was going to be pour me a drink, Alabama, if you don't cut that out. It's going to be pour me a drink. He said, you know, he's going to take you out after the meeting. Are you eating yet? And I said, oh, yes, I'm drinking liquid food. I can't swallow food, real food. They said, well, you're going to tonight. We'll cut it in small pieces and food feature. But you're going to eat a steak and a potato and a salad. And that was me and Dennis. And said, we'd stay all night. We'd go to a cafe that's open all night. We got through eating, and then they said they were going home with me, and if I was uncomfortable in my girdle, I better go take it off. They'd be there for a while. And they sat down there, and I don't know how long it took them to take my inventory. They told me they heard nothing but pull me, pull me, pull me. They didn't hear any gratitude that I was sober. They didn't hear any gratitude that I'd been married to a man that I loved for a year and a week. And they said they never had been in love like that, had never been married to anybody that they loved like that. And that I was a fortunate person to have had a year and a week with a man like Jim. And that they had been jealous of our relationship. And they didn't know anybody in the club that had one like Jim and I had. And they just stayed all night, and they told me if I didn't start working with some new girls right away that I was going to be drunk. And you know what happened, of course? The next day I got a call from a girl, could she come and stay with me? You know who told her to call me. Then she had a boyfriend that was an alcoholic and drinking. So I had to bring him over to the house. I didn't sleep him over there, but I fed him and took him to meetings. And I was cooking for the two alcoholics and getting them to meetings and getting so busy with my 12-stepping that I quit that poor me thing. I'm so grateful that these two men love me enough to tell me the truth. I'm so grateful. I got a job. Went to work. I really had never been prepared to work. That had not been my aim in life. And I have done some odd jobs. I worked out at Bullock's for a year. Hostess in the dining room. You don't make much as a hostess, and I couldn't carry those trays. I would have dropped them right on them. But I stayed there a year, so I'd have a good work recommendation. I had worked for family, but my sponsors told me that didn't count. That families couldn't write the recommendations for you. I'd worked in the automobile business, and for my brothers and my uncle. And I got a job working in a men's hunting lodge up in Klamath Falls, up in the mountains. And I went in as an assistant to the manager. I was just a flunky, that's what I was, really. The next year I went back as hostess and reservation clerk. And the next year I was hired as manager of the hunting lodge. And they said I made more money for them than anybody, and that they had more compliments than anybody. And my friends asked me, how did you know what to do? And I said, well, we always entertained at home. And I just put the same kind of food, had them put the same kind of food on the table that my mother served when we had guests, you know. And I said, I've been raised with four brothers, you know, and a daddy and a lot of uncles and so forth. And I said, I like men. I got along with them just fine. And those men liked me, too. The company told me that they would raise my salary, that they wanted me to come back. And I thanked them, but no thank you. And I got married again, and it didn't work. And I would like to say here that sex and alcoholism is not enough to make a good marriage. AA and sex won't get it. You need more in common than that, or at least I did. It did not work. This is a nice man. It's working with a non-alcoholic woman. And I'm real glad they're happy, because I'm just as happy as I can be. I'm free. I go anytime I want to, any way I want to. And I like it that way. I almost married a man in New York for his money, and then I decided I couldn't do it to the poor fella. And so, and I liked it, because he just loved buying me things. And I liked it, and I don't like New York. I like Los Angeles better. I like him as a friend, but I wasn't in love with the man. But I sure liked the things he gave me, you know. And then I decided I can't do that to anybody. It wouldn't be fair, because I'd leave by the time he got any older. And I'm glad I didn't do it to him. He married a young woman, and they got all kinds of things in the will, what she can have and what she can't have. But he's got somebody to take care of him, and I'm so glad. I am so glad. But I'm so glad I'm not the one. You see, I wouldn't have said these kind of things that I've said to you here tonight, except that I have accepted that that's the way I am. I wasn't in love with the man. The money appealed to me. He had a brownstone house there in one of the best streets in New York, and he owned a big business, traveled a great deal, and all of those kind of things. Gave me lovely presents. He didn't ask me sending them back. But I just, I just do better not being married. No husband's going to put up with me going out at all hours of the night carrying the message. He goes to AA meetings, but I don't like those meetings in New York as good as I do in California. I wouldn't fit in New York as well. I think they're dull. I like your kind of AA here. He's good AA member, but not the same kind I am. He's not as enthusiastic as I am about AA. I just love being sober. I love being in AA. I love trying to carry the message. And I went down at the North Hollywood, we call it a clubhouse, but you don't pay any dues there. It's a building that we have meetings in. And it's like a central office, except it's not called that. We're the oldest group in that part of the country. And we get calls all day long, and I answer them, and I tell them, just exactly what to do. And I asked them to come over and see me, and I'd introduce them to somebody. And I just love it. I love it. Gotcha, I'm getting paid for doing something that I love doing. They said that I work hard there, and I do work hard. And I can't quite work without pay, but they pay me well. One of the board came in and said, Alabama, that they haven't ever paid you correctly in here. And I said, I know it, but I like what I'm doing. I don't want to leave. And they said, well, we're going to raise your salary. And they raised it quite a few $1,000s. And I love to get away like this. They let me go anytime I'm invited to a convention. I just love it. And I know they're not going to say no. If they do, they know Alabama would quit. I like trying to carry the message. I love being with you alcoholics. I come here to feed. And I feed upon what I hear here and what I see in you. And then I try to take it back to the young people that come into our group. I try to take back what I hear and what I have felt in these meetings here. I love being sober. I'm so grateful to God that He saw fit that these alcoholics knew what to do for me. I am so grateful for these four gentlemen that loved me enough and who had wives that would come with them. And I think one of the nicest things that these men did was tell me over and over that I was a beautiful lady. And I started acting like a lady. And I tried to do this with some of the girls that come down half naked, with the belly button showing. I try to tell them that we have to have a little respect for the program and they don't need to advertise down there with the hair. I try to tell them what's appropriate and inappropriate. And I sit when I'm home. Because I want them to get well. I wish everybody in the world that was an alcoholic could have this program. But everybody that comes to AA never get. A lot of them don't get it. A lot of people still don't know that the Alcoholics Anonymous. We are the fortunate. I'm so happy to have been here with you. I'm so glad I didn't go over my time. And thank you for that nice introduction, Steve. And I love every one of you. And I'm going to take your love home with me. Thank you.